Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Rush into Old Navy today for up to 50% off store-wide. Get dresses from $15 for women, $12 for girls, plus up to 75% off clearance for the whole family right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/16 to 10/20, select styles only.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. I'm Chris Manning from FearTheSword.com. Joining me today is a colleague of mine from Fear the Sword, David Zavok. David, how's it going?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm doing good. So, game three happened. We'll get to that in a second. But let's start with some kind of sort of Cavsy news. Adrian Wojnarowski from The Vertical has reported that the Magic have hired Travis Weltman as their GM. That was a place David Griffin was reportedly drawing some interest from. We don't really know much about Griffin's contract situation other than this. There hasn't been negotiations. We haven't had an update on that situation in about 2 weeks. To me, the reading the tea leaves on this without having sources on this makes me think this is more likely that Griffin stays. The Hawks are also interested in maybe something else could open up, but this seems like it seems more likely now considering how close the draft is and everything that Griffin is probably going to be around next year, assuming the Cavs pay him.
Yeah, I have I have third and fourth hand sources who have said things in both directions. I have really good sources that have not told me things. I interviewed Griffin a couple weeks ago, and I was an idiot and really didn't ask him about the situation. Like, I interviewed him, and then literally I think it was the next morning, before I had even published the interview, but after I had talked to him, I think the Orlando story came out originally. So I looked like an idiot for not asking about it. I still should have, but I didn't. So I don't have a whole lot, from him on it. What I would say is that there aren't a whole lot of teams that are willing to spend any amount of money, at least in terms of the roster, and the Cavs are one of them. There was that front office shakeup where some of the ownership doesn't seem to have as much of a say in things as maybe they had. That could, open up a space for Griffin to become a president or become, get more of a role in things than he already has. But I think he pretty much runs the show anyway. But I'd be surprised if he left. I've never gotten any indication from him that he doesn't want to be there. He hasn't told me that he wants to stay or anything like that. So I'm not trying to say that I have sources, but he's had a great run in Cleveland. So it just makes, why would you want to leave unlimited money and LeBron James? And if you're the Cavs, how do you break up a guy that, consistently brings in, high level players? So
yeah, it'd be a hard sell. It'd be a really hard sell.
I think
sell.
It makes sense to me.
It'd be a really hard sell.
Both ways.
Yeah, both ways. I could see Griffin if he didn't want to deal with Gilbert. Functionally, if he's that's something that frustrates him, but that is what it is too, right? It's just not something. It seems like the draft's going to be so close, and teams can't talk to him until after the season. It almost be like seems more likely, maybe more interesting if he just like left, you know, like and like waited until next year or something like that. But he's and he is sort of a guy that I don't. I mean, you would know better than me. You've talked to him more than I have, but it's something that it seems like I don't know if he's a guy that's like ruled by money either. He doesn't seem like a guy that's like gonna make his decision fully based on how much money he's gonna get paid. And he's certainly in line for a raise, right? Like he should be making probably what Bob Myers is making, what Buford is making, not and maybe his track record isn't as long as a Buford, but what he's done the last couple of years is remarkable. You know, like he's been one of the best executives in the league, and that to me is still like one of the most interesting things about where the Cavs are at, because they're gonna have to kind of get this wrapped up the moment the finals end, you know, or the season ends. They have to kind of get moving on that, because things are gonna kind of go very quickly, and that just kind of will set the tone for the rest of the summer.
Yeah, you know, I guess the only thing that I would say, just from what I've gotten from him, he is so competitive and yes. He wants to win so badly that taking a year off, I think, would be not necessarily because he's like a workaholic, although, you know, I think he works extremely hard, but I think what drives him is just winning and putting, you know, the Cavs in the best, you know, possible situation. So I'd have a hard time seeing him, you know, being able to get away for a full year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not true. So the most important thing going on right now, though, is that the Cavs are going to play basketball on Tuesday. Game 3 was interesting. Like, being there was weird because it just, no one really seemed to believe that they like were gonna lose. Like, even like being around the other media members and seeing how people were gonna react, like, it was very surprising to see how some people react to it. Like, it was just kind of an interesting kind of environment. It was had some very high highs. You had the first half, they looked good. You had the Browns draft picks that everyone got like really amped about. It was incredibly loud when they announced Garrett and Njoku and Peppers. And then they lose, and LeBron's in a weird mood, and like he has that yelling thing happen, and everyone just seemed a little bit more annoyed than down. Like, this didn't seem like they were mad, but just a weird game 3. I don't know if it reminded you of the regular season anyway, but to me, it reminded me of a weird Cavs regular season loss in a lot of ways.
I kind of compared it to one of those games a couple years ago when they started 18-20. And LeBron was just having those games where he had like 7 and 8 turnovers, and he was, you know, clearly sort of unhappy or maybe even hurt. And then, you know, he went away for, you know, a week and a half and came back and was a new player and had a new mindset and whatever. Not that you really had bad body language from him. I didn't really, there just wasn't any body language from him. So I just think in general, like, you know, it's the same issue with, you know, well, why are the Cavs so bad when LeBron goes to the floor? Well, they're built almost entirely for having him on the floor. You know, every piece is sort of complementary to him. And, you know, sometimes Kyrie can do it, and a lot of the time he can't. But it just, you know, when you get a bad game from LeBron like that, and he owned it, and Ty Lue owned it, and whatever, it just is. It's difficult to overcome, and I think what was interesting about it was you got good Kyrie. I don't think it was like a great Kyrie game, but I thought it was good Kyrie. You got good Kevin Love. You got great Tristan Thompson. J.R. Smith played reasonably well and had that big shot, but you know, when you're in the Eastern Conference Finals and you don't get a, and LeBron James plays bad, I mean, it's going to be tough to win. And, you know, you add to that Marcus Smart doing what he did. And, you know, I just think it's like one of those, you tip your cap, you know, you have, it's like in baseball when you have it all set up, your ace is on the mound, and, you feel like, you know, you put a three spot up in the first inning, and you know that you got your ace going, and you feel really good about it. And then maybe they get to the pitcher a little bit, and you lose, but you just kind of tip your cap because you had your best pitcher, you put yourself in the best situation, and sometimes the results don't work out. So I didn't really watch it angry. I agree, just watching it at home, I was kind of like, it's very hard to see them actually losing the game. But then, you know, maybe because I'm a contrarian, the last 5 minutes, I really did think it was sort of a coin flip, and the possessions at the end sort of kind of went back and forth. And I mean, even Avery Bradley's shot, you know, was in and out and rolled around and whatever. But no, I mean, they gave up way too many 3-point attempts. Boston made some that they had no business making, but you know, the Cavs are letting them get those shots off, and it came back to hurt them.
Yeah, this was like the second half was like Kevin Love doesn't shoot well. Kyrie only gets a couple buckets. Like Tristan Thompson's like the only guy like generating offense in certain weaknesses. Like Tristan was like, you could just like feel with Tristan in this game where like when he's playing hard all the time, he's like the benchmark for everybody else, right? Like if he's playing really, really hard and things are, he's still doing stuff and he gets 15 free throws, which is crazy to see him do that and make 12 of them. And even that, like if he, you can just like look at Tristan, how hard he's working, and then like watch Kyrie or watch Love, and you're just like, right, like they're not trying that hard. And then they, you know, the end of the game looked goofy. That, you know, JR loses Avery Bradley and they lose. I don't think that game matters. I said that on the post game show. We've talked about this, you know, you and I've talked about this. We talked about this with the staff. That game does not matter that much. It's more so just like kind of like a regular season game, kind of like last year's Toronto's game 3 and game 4 on the road in the Eastern Conference Finals. It's just a Cavsy thing to kind of do a game like that. And it's not great. You know, you certainly could have gotten more out of certain guys in the second half and still won. But like in a week, we're not going to remember that, I don't think. And that's sort of how you kind of think you have to think about it is, are the Cavs going to probably still win this in 5? Probably. Like that's probably going to happen. And as weird as that game was, as goofy as it was, it's going to be just a little blip in the story of this Cavs team.
Yeah, and I mean, you also, you know, you don't want to sort of absolve people. Like,
no, not at all. I mean, yeah, it's true.
There were two rebounds in the second half that LeBron lost out on or didn't, you know, go get that directly led to Boston points. So, you know, there's 4 Boston points because LeBron doesn't get, you know, the rebound that's there. You know, and so maybe LeBron was tired, or maybe he was upset about something or annoyed about something or whatever, but you know, he certainly didn't play, you know, but he was also sort of due for one of these games. So I don't, you know, it's hard to blame LeBron for a whole lot, but again, if he doesn't play very well, it's hard to overcome that because they're really built around him being great.
Yeah, they are so much built around LeBron, just like doing LeBron stuff. And that, I mean, does that indictful on Kyrie at all? Is that like an indictment on Kevin Love at all? If they can't, like, if they need LeBron having a bad game like that, that they can't overcome, like, it's a weird thing. Like, you'd think those guys would play better, but Love, I mean, was great in the first half. Kyrie, I think, had a pretty good overall game, but is that an indictment on them at all that those guys aren't sort of filling in and at least doing enough to beat a Celtics team that's missing its best player?
Yeah, maybe. I think, you know, again, you know, Marcus Smart and Jonas Jerakbo's performances sort of complicate things. Like, I mean, it's just, am I going to, you know, go on a rant about, you know, Kevin Love not being able to complete a game when, or, you know, have a complete game when, if it isn't for, you know, if Marcus Smart goes 5 of 10 instead of 7 of 10, you know, they win the game. You know, I don't know. But I mean, yes, right? Because, you know, the results are the results, and Kyrie wasn't able to sort of bring it home. But for me, and I used to go through this, I guess, you know, and obviously I'm sort of the Kyrie apologist, but for me, when the Cavs sucked and Kyrie would take a lot of abuse, one of the things I would always argue is, why am I going to be mad at the best player, like, when they suck? You know, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time being mad that the best player wasn't better. There's all these players that were bad, and that's probably where the focus should be. So should Kevin and Kyrie have, you know, been able to push him over the finish line? I'm sure. But I guess I would look more at Kyle Korver, you know, who kind of forced some threes, not very good ones a lot of the time, and wasn't hitting them. And then, you know, LeBron, who just really struggled. But it's hard to look at a lot of the players and point out sort of negatives, because I think, you know, Korver and LeBron are really the only two that had disappointing games as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think the Korver thing is worth just kind of noting. That's a really good point, because you could just see him taking threes that weren't Kyle Korver threes. He was, you know, he's certainly going to be – he gets some leeway because he's Kyle freaking Korver. He's an incredible shooter. But there's like a thing with him where he was just firing out threes where he's like off bounds, and that's not really good. It was like waste of possessions a little bit. And he's been good at defense too, but like that to me is like, if he's not shooting, what's sort of the point? And like Shumpert had some miscues, which I guess isn't surprising. JR had some defensive miscues, although it was really good to see him shoot really well. That was like a really good thing. I think JR getting into rhythm as a shooter is going to be really important for the Cavs moving forward. But is there anything about game three besides just the obvious that you want to see the Cavs fix in game four? I have one thing.
All right, maybe go and I'll try and comment on.
So my one thing is, you look at how they defended differently. I just kind of want to see them just kind of actually take them seriously on that end for like parts of the game. They don't probably need to do it all game, but Boston just kind of like changes their identity, and if they can just close out on guys a little bit tighter and make it at least harder for average shooters to shoot, that's going to help. And I think on the other end, and kind of on the same wavelength there, like Boston's going to be better defensively without Isaiah. Like, it's harder to pick on them. You just have to know you're going to have to work for it a little bit harder than maybe you did when Isaiah's not on there. Like, there's just sort of effort things in a series they're going to win that would just sort of be a positive sign if they could just uptick it when they kind of need to and they're supposed to right now. But, I mean, that's it. And that's just like a very small thing that I kind of just feel like they'll do, because I don't think they want to like hang around this for six games, unless it's just some like, you know, crazy planner or like whatever. But like, I can't imagine they want to be in this series for six games and have to like travel back to Boston. They're going to have to do that and then travel back to Cleveland for another game. Like, to me, it doesn't seem like something they would really want to do.
No, I would say, I think that's a great point. Especially the second one. I know, without having the numbers in front of me, I know their points in the paint were way down. Part of that's a little misleading because Tristan Thompson's getting fouled, and so, you know, some of his free throws, if he doesn't get fouled, are points in the paint, and then, you know, it doesn't look like as big of an issue as if he just dunks it. You know, again, that kind of gets back to LeBron, because I thought Kyrie was driving. To your point, I did think that, particularly in that second half, the Celtics defense was better. And I think Kyrie was kind of trying to force the issue and get to the paint a little bit. And the Celtics did a really nice job of sort of closing that down, which kind of goes back to sort of what my view was before the series started, which was that, you know, Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley are really nice defenders. And so, this kind of goes back to a roundabout with your question in terms of, you know, is it an indictment on Kyrie that they can't win, you know, in a game without Isaiah or whatever. But this is not the series that I think, you know, the Cavs should be relying on Kyrie to win it. You know, I think Kevin Love needs to step up. I think Tristan needs to step up. They both did for the most part last night. You know, they just need LeBron to be like, you know, B plus, A minus instead of.
I don't even
know
if it's like that. It's like 2% better, and I think they're
fine. Yeah, right.
Know?
Well, yeah. Yeah, you're talking about a game that was decided by one shot. So, Yeah, I don't know. I think you're 100% right. I'd like to see LeBron maybe if he needs to start in the post, like whatever. But yeah, they need to be tougher, and for me that means attacking a little bit, and it does not need to be Kyrie. So, you know, we'll see if they do that.
I like that point that Kyrie, this isn't the series you want, that Kyrie is going to win you. Like, I really do enjoy that just because they're going to need him against Golden State. Like, they're going to need him against Golden State to win. For him to outplay Curry a couple of times at least to win that series. Kevin Love should be dominating Jrebko. He should be dominating Jay Crowder. He should be dominating these guys. Interesting, as he's done with on the glass, needs to dominate there and take advantage. Right? I think that's I think like a whole overall like Kevin Love game that we saw the first two games, if he just kind of doesn't fade the way he did in game three, I think they probably win. And it's again, like you said, it's a game decided by one shot. Like, there's not too much you can complain about besides effort when you look at that game for me, and it's just, you know, or just LeBron playing better, like, that's fine. You know, he just has two shots, or, you know, like, makes one more defensive play, like, they win that game. And, I mean, that, to me, says more about the Cavs' effort than it does Boston's chances of coming back. Like, I can't see this going past five. Like, maybe it could go to six, but I'd be a little bit shocked if it got that far.
Yeah, no, I said Cavs in five before the start of the, you know, yeah, the
so
series.
Did, so did I.
And I feel pretty confident that that's where it will go. You know, selfishly, I'm going to cover tomorrow night's game, and I think it'll make for a little bit more of an interesting, you know, atmosphere both before and probably after the game too. You know, the one thing that, you know, maybe this prepares them a little bit more for Golden State, although, you know, I don't know what could prepare them more for Golden State than what happened a year ago. But, you know, the Celtics crowd was not active or interested or able to, you know, sort of get into anything there. And so, you know, potentially, you know, if it gets back to Boston, even if it is 3-1, you know, maybe if the Cavs, you know, get punched on the mouth at the beginning of game five or something, and that Boston crowd really gets into it a little bit, maybe that is a little bit of adversity. So, or at least maybe just to see that, or, you know, deal with that type of noise, I guess. So, I'm kind of grasping here, you know, at straws, but, you know, playing more games at a high level, you know, maybe that can help a little bit.
Yeah. Definitely with you on that. Let's talk about one more topic here. The Cavs have, I think, had two things that are sort of interesting and they're related in a way, and that's their rotation, and that's their defense. They have these two things that have been up and down a little bit. They've had some changes. The Boston series rotation has been different than the Raptors series. It's been different than Indiana. Do you like the Channing Frye Richard Jefferson lineup more, or do you like RJ? Like, do you think Shumpert should be, like, what do you kind of make of how Ty Lue's managed that rotation as we're into the third round of the playoffs?
That one at the end of the first quarter last night, I really liked. It was Kyrie, mm-hmm. Shumpert, Korver, Tristan, and Kevin.
Yeah, I like that a lot too. It's a good LeBron rest lineup. It's a good bridge the gap lineup.
Yeah, so I was a big fan of that. You know, I think one thing that I haven't seen people talking about is Deron Williams' shoulder. I thought he was, you know, I think he's been, like, pretty good for most of the playoffs. And I think he's important for, you know, sort of 12 minutes a game, just in terms of getting you sort of functional, you know, play. So, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see if he's healthy and sort of how he feels, you know, going into tomorrow night's game. But, no, I think for the most part, I'm pretty happy with what Ty Lue has done. He's, you know, he's mixed and matched, but he's not playing anybody, you know, that I find, you know, unplayable. You know, I did get, you know, Namina texted me, are you worried about Richard Jefferson? He hasn't seemed to be playing very well. I don't know that he's played enough to really get, you know, a real strong sort of view of where he's at. But I do think he's a guy that, just simply knows the right where to be, you know, the right place to be. And I also think Richard Jefferson at this point in his career, you know, if there is a Cavs player on the team that might have trouble getting motivated to play in the Eastern Conference Finals against Boston, like, it might be Richard Jefferson. Like, he is only playing this year to A, play the Warriors, and B, possibly win a title. Like, those are the only two things that I think he, like, can possibly get excited about. And then, like, maybe if he feels that the refs are not treating him fairly, he'll get worked up during a game. But, like, that's it. So, like, I just don't think I just don't know how sort of into it he is at this point. And that makes it tough for Ty Lue, because, you know, how do you determine, you know, whether or not he'll be playable against the Warriors or not? And I don't have a very good answer for that. But I do know that, you know, he'd be as up for it as possible.
Yeah, I think the one thing I kind of wonder is, do you try to, you know, do the Channing Frye and Richard Jefferson thing? Because they've sort of picked between those two so far. I wonder if you try to play them both against Golden State. I was watching them play the Spurs. As much as you can learn from an uncompetitive game, like, I look at that second quarter lineup that they're using that the Warriors are using, and it's no KD and it's no Steph to start the quarter. That's when LeBron is gonna play, and maybe they play KD, you know, in the finals and alter their rotation to match that. But that seems like a time you could go for the jugular a little bit and try to do a lot. And of course, if Iggy and Draymond are out there, they're gonna have two guys that are gonna have throwing on LeBron. But if you have Frye out there, maybe you need to shooting, and, like, you know, maybe RJ can do some work on Draymond for spurts. Like, I kind of think you have to maybe play both, but you also want to play Shump, and I think you want to play Deron Williams, because I think as long as his shoulder is okay, and he's going to be, you know, workable on defense, I think you maybe need his creation too. I think there's some interesting choices he's going to have to make in sort of the middle part, because he still has been experimenting. We're like a game removed from Lue going to that Kevin Love to start with the bench to start the second quarter, something we hadn't seen, like, ever, you know? Like, that was, like, a new thing, and that he's just still trying. And it's interesting that, like, we're getting so close to the finals, we're getting so close to that matchup. As much as we probably are going to see a lot of what we saw last year, it's a different defensive strategy so far this year to an extent, and you're seeing a team that necessarily hasn't pegged down every little part of their rotation yet, which seems fine, but you wonder if it's going to, you know, kind of be in flux in the finals as well.
Yeah, I don't for me, I it's hard for me to see Channing Frye really being effective. It's possible. For me, I would stick with Shump, just, you know, in terms of needing that athleticism, and then I'd go with Korver and JR to get that shooting that you miss out on. So you could go with you know, lineups where you have Deron Williams, Shumpert, JR, Korver. Or, I mean, you could honestly not even play Deron Williams if you wanted to. You could just do LeBron, JR, Korver, Love, Tristan. You could put LeBron at the four with Tristan and play Korver, JR, Deron Williams. For me, I think I'd want to maximize the minutes with Korver out there. I think you can hide Korver on, you know, on an Andre Iguodala. I think you can play Korver without getting killed, as long as you have a Shumpert out there to sort of try and balance things. But I could be very wrong. And I mean, Frye is a better shooter than JR. He's, you know, a much better shooter than Iman Shumpert is. So, you know, it could be a situation where the Cavs don't really have a chance to win unless they get guys like Channing Frye going off. So, you know, catching lightning in a bottle might be the way to steal a game.
I think 3-point shooting and Frye and Korver are going to be kind of big. I really think they're going to need Korver to be workable against Iguodala. And I think how Iggy has looked, and he sort of just looked kind of dead, like, to be a little bit over the top about it. Like, I, Like, he's looked not like Andre Iguodala, and that's really important because it also gives them another guy that they maybe can't use against LeBron. You know, like, that does that put more pressure on Draymond? You know, maybe it doesn't matter because the Warriors are just the freaking Warriors. But like, you have LeBron James. As long as LeBron James is LeBron James, the Cavs have a chance. And I think ultimately he's sort of the guy you hope erases all your mistakes. Like, if there's a lineup issue, if there's anything like that, I certainly think like, you have a chance. Like, you're still going to have a shot to be a champ again. And that's sort of all you can ask.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll wrap it up on this, Dave. What's one thing, you're going to be there. Everyone should make sure you follow Dave and follow, you know, us there. Who do you think, what's one thing you're kind of looking to see in game four? Like, what's just one, could be anything, either side. What are you looking to see in game four?
Yeah, I think Deron Williams' health will be interesting. See how he plays. There's always a, you know, potential for a LeBron bounce back game. I think that's what most people are going to be watching really closely. And you know, maybe Kyrie can sustain some of this shooting, cause he's had, I think a couple good shooting games in a row after, you know, prolonged struggles. So, Deron Williams, Kyrie and LeBron are probably the most interesting guys, I would say.
Yeah. I want to see if JR shoots as well as he did, in game three. Again, that was, I think, again, a big thing for him to kind of just let loose a little bit as a shooter. And I think LeBron is the tone setter. As always, he's the guy who is going to dictate what the Cavs are and how they sort of feel about stuff. So that to me is worth watching. And I want to see if Tristan, I kind of hope Tristan has another cool free throw game. Cause I just kind of, I found that sort of randomly enjoyable that we had Tristan Thompson. We're watching him shoot 15 free throws. Like, that was to me just a very like weird thing, and he did it well. And I'm all for sort of like the weird quirks. Like, if you're going to lose a game where Tristan Thompson made 12 out of his 15 free throws, that is like, that just feels like a waste.
Yeah, it's hard to argue. I mean, and that undercuts some of my, you know, well, the Marcus Smart just made a bunch of threes because, well, Tristan Thompson made a bunch of free throws too.
Yeah. The Marcus Smart winning the math game just seems like not likely to happen again though. So,
right.
Yeah. Dave, as always, it's a pleasure. Make sure you give Dave a follow on Twitter at David Zavok so you can check out his coverage from game four. As always, we'll have a recap. We got a special guest, former site manager Conrad Kazmarek, will be here to recap game four tomorrow. Tomorrow, you'll hear that tomorrow. And as always, this has been Locked On Cavs. Have a great rest of your day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.